Access number 30639, Mr. Alan Davis, Rail 17.
A station of the size of Tilehurst Station, so it wasn't very big. But it meant that I could get home by train and back again for weekends, for example. And that was seemingly what I spent my time trying to do, get home and, and enjoy the comforts of...
So when were you demobilised then?
And I was demobilised... Oh, I happen to have watched it here. Yeah, because it came back in the post today, having sent it. I found, because I need it for some other purpose, which I won't bore you with, my certificate of service and release. And it says that the my day of release, that was the day I was demobbed, I suppose, was the 28th of August 1947. And my last day of service, because I suppose you've got so many weeks leave on demob, was on the 16th of November 1947. And I'm happy to say that the last entry here is adverse reports, and it says nil. So nobody caught up with me on any of the things I might have done that were illegal. So that was the I was demobbed then in August 1947. So I went from Chivina with another guy that I'd palled up with, and we went up to Blackpool, somewhere up there, to be demobbed, and we got our demob suit.
What was that like? I mean, people joke about it. What was yours like?
Well, it wasn't bad. I wore it for quite some time. It was a grey. I chose a grey pinstripe suit, and I chose a pair of, I think, well, I can't remember whether black or brown shoes, which were very good. And I think we had two shirts, and two pairs of pants, and all done up in a little square box. But I wore that suit for quite... Oh, and a raincoat, which I also wore for a long time. So that was all right. And whilst we were up at... it wasn't Blackpool, it was some place near Blackpool. This friend of mine and I, or the chap I'd palled up with, decided we'd stay in Blackpool in a bed and breakfast or a hotel for a couple of days, because we'd never been to Blackpool before. And having taken one look at it, we probably weren't going to ever to go back there again, which turned out to be pretty well true. So we had two or three days in Blackpool, sampling the Sose entertainments of Blackpool, and that was the end of my service.
Now, what about your post-war career? I mean, you've come out, you've been in the RAF a long time now, you hadn't really settled into anything beforehand. What were you going to do?
Well, I was very attracted to doing something with farming, and I wanted at that time to go to an agricultural college, which is what I did. And I found it very difficult to settle down to being a civilian. And so I worked on a farm for a year for absolute minimum amount of money, theoretically, as a pupil.
Now, what were your problems you were having? What was it that was giving you difficulty?
Well, the only difficulty was I really didn't know what I wanted to do. My life had been fully occupied by flying, if not for any purpose, but it was for flying. And I had this hankering to do something with agriculture, which I was most interested in. And I found it very difficult to get my foot on the bottom rung of any farming ladder, any agricultural ladder whatsoever. I didn't think... jolly well knew I wasn't bright enough to go and take a degree in agriculture, but I did think I'd like to go to agricultural college, which I did. I went after a year on a farm. I went to the agricultural college at Cirencester for almost 3 years, and while I was there, when I started there, I discovered that they also ran a course in estate management, which would enable me to qualify as a chartered surveyor, which is what I did. But I did find becoming a civilian really quite difficult to do, and it must have been much more difficult for people that had been involved in combat. I found it difficult enough. Anyway, I did all that.
And so you qualified as a chartered surveyor?
Yeah, I eventually managed to pass all the exams to get become a chartered surveyor in the agriculture and land agency branch. And that's how I, well, the qualification I had when I started working for the Ministry of Agriculture, which I did from then on. But
was that a successful career then?
Yeah, I thought so. I finished up at principal grade as a divisional surveyor, and I was very happy at what I did. I enjoyed doing what I did very much. But whilst I was at Cirencester, I rejoined the Volunteer Reserve, rather like Gordon Henderson did, he probably told you. And you could sign on in the VR, as it was called. It was rather like the Territorial Army for the Air Force. You did evening lectures and 14 days continuous training a year. And I signed on for 5 years, and at the end of the first 5 years, I signed on for another 5 years.
So that was from which year, from when to when?
It
doesn't matter, sorry.
I finished in 1960, so I started in 1950.
So what do you remember of that?
Absolutely delightful flying. We flew tiger moths and chipmunks, and they were both lovely aircraft to fly. My parent unit was the reserve flying school at Exeter, so I was able to live at home and carry out my what was required of me in the volunteer reserve. And all the chaps who were a member of the reserve were all ex-pilots of various types and grades and experience. So when we all got together and we were all flying tiger moth together, it was terrific fun. If you went off on a cross-country, you could be sure that somebody else would go on the same cross-country, and you did it in formation, unofficially. We tried to do formation aerobatics with terrible results. Luckily, no disasters, but we weren't very good at it. But trying to do formation aerobatics in a tiger moth is more than difficult. Even the instructors who were flying tiger moths all the time, even they found it difficult to stay in formation at the top of a loop in a tiger moth. It must be much easier in a jet aircraft, but it certainly wasn't easy in a tiger moth. So 10 years in the reserve, and that abruptly finished in 1960. I happen to know the date because I looked it up quite recently. Then, quite unexpectedly, about 2 or 3 years ago, this offer came round to from the Ministry of Defence Veterans Agency, I suppose it is, whereby they would pay for any ex-service men or women to go back to their scenes of their crimes. And Kurt Tausig was the one who, because I may not have told you in this interview, but for the last 60 years we've annually had a squadron reunion.
Now, well, before we go on, let's do that, because we always do associate. Tell me about the 225's squadron regimental association.
The reunion. It's just a squadron reunion.
It's a reunion, it's not...
No, it's just a reunion. Now, this, because... Jimmy Lupton, who was the adjutant, I think I told you, had left before I went to Klagenfurt. But he had kept the name and address of everybody on the squadron, everybody who'd passed through the squadron, of any rank, all ranks. And so in 1947 or 8, he started, 1947 I suppose, he started convening reunions in September. And originally they were timed so that anybody who wanted to go to the North African reunion at the same month could go to both reunions. So that's why it always takes place in September, October of each year. And we just celebrated our 60-something reunion. And the numbers have obviously declined over the years. And it's still an all-ranks reunion. But nowadays it takes place in the Royal Air Force Club in Piccadilly.
And but still enjoyable.
Still very enjoyable. But by some quirk of financial circumstances, I suppose, it was decided some years ago that instead of meeting and it being a stag do, men only, we would invite wives or girlfriends or whatever. And ever since we did that, the numbers have been maintained, and everybody has become extremely good friends. But, you know, wives and girlfriends and families and so on.
That also, 225 Squadron took advantage of this veterans agency offer, didn't they?
Yes.
Is that what happened?
Yes. Well, then Kurt got to learn that this veterans agency would pay for the return of a unit or individual people to some place that they'd been to during the war. And Kurt remembered, because he was there, that when the squadron was stationed in Florence, the squadron headquarters and officers' mess was in the Villa Cora. And he wrote to the Villa Cora, discovered that instead of being a rotten, cap-tired old building as it was when the squadron were there, it was now a five-star hotel. And so he persuaded the Veterans Agency, people who funded these things, that they would pay for 3 days, 3 nights in the Villa Cora, in just on the edge of Florence. Well, it was a very super and very expensive hotel, and we went there in what it would be September, October of two years ago.
So 2006?
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember the exact year, but let's say 2006.
And what was the trip like? You'd never been based at Villa Cora.
No, I had not personally been there.
But they had.
But a lot of the others had.
What was it like, the trip?
Well, the Veterans Agency paid for the flight and the accommodation. And when Kurt sent in the application for all of us, the Veterans Agency said, "But you're all over 80. And not only can you take your wives or whatever, partners with you, but you can also take a carer." So Mary and I laughed at this, and we thought how nice it would be to take our daughter with us, our daughter Sarah. Our son was away, so he was out of the running, but Sarah is a teacher and would not be on holiday at this time. So, but we told her about it, and she jumped at the idea and got special permission to and leave of absence. And so she came with us as our carer. Well, Mary and I flew from either Heathrow or Gatwick, and she flew from... another airfield. And... when we both submitted our respective applications, and somebody said, "Well, isn't it usual that the carer flies with you from the same airfield?" But we said, "Yes, probably it is, but not so in this case." But the Veterans Agency didn't seem to mind very much, and they paid for her as well. So all three of us were able to join this party, and it numbered about 35 or 40, I suppose, altogether. And we all met up at the Villa Cora. And we had 3 days of very luxurious living there. And on the Sunday, I suppose, we went there from the Friday night till the Monday morning. On the Sunday, we got taken up into the mountains of Montemurlo, is the name of the place, where one of the squadron members had bailed out during the war, and his plane had landed without him in it. He parachuted down quite safely. Had landed in a field near Montemurlo, and quite recently, over the last 10 years or so, the enthusiastic diggers up of old aeroplanes had dug up this aeroplane, found the engine, found no pilot in it, and got hold of Air Ministry and found out through them who the name of the pilot that was flying it when it spun into the ground. And contacted him and invited him and his family over and entertained them absolutely most royally for 3 or 4 days. And was so pleased to actually meet the pilot who had flown this aeroplane and had flown in support and in defence of Italy and it was at Monte Merlo. So fortuitously, this was somewhere quite near Florence. So we were able to go to Monte Merlo on the Sunday morning by bus, and we were greeted in the village square by the mayor with his regalia on, and treated like returning heroes, which we didn't think we were, but they thought we were. And we had a service in the village square, and Gordon Henderson laid a wreath on behalf of the squadron against the war memorial, and they did the same thing for the people in the village who had been, or nearby the roundabout, who had been killed during the war. And again, they entertained us in the mountains in a mountain restaurant in the most sumptuous meal, with wine that flowed like, you know, like anything. And we had an absolutely marvellous time. So that was the official return of 225 Squadron and and its dependents, if you like, wives and daughters and so on, to the scene of our crimes and the Villa Cora. And the squadron had flown from what was now Florence Airfield, and they had some excitement at that time, but that was long before I joined the squadron. Excuse me, sorry. Yeah.
And so that was it was all well worthwhile, Australia. The visit was a great success.
The visit was a great success, and we all met up again, the same old gang. The Gordon Henderson, the Kurt Tausigs, and their wives, although Gordon isn't married right now. So we had a very happy reunion. But every year we have this superb reunion, which is very quiet, sedate, and well ordered now, with wives and daughters and so on in train, and they enjoy it as well, and become a very happy and regular annual event.
Thank you very much.